Today we're continuing our summer series in the parables, stories Jesus told. And Jesus told these stories for a few different reasons. One is he told them to expose things in the world, in the culture around him, in the people that he was addressing it to. And I would say he told these parables to expose things in us, even here today, 2,000 years later. Secondly, Jesus told these stories to call his audience to a response, to action. And Matthew chapter 13 is the chapter that we're going to be looking at today, and it's full of parables. Eight, in fact, that are recorded in one chapter that Jesus seems to tell in rapid fire. The situation. Jesus is on the northern shores of the Sea of Galilee, about here to Chilliwack away from Jerusalem. Jesus has just come off a peculiar and interesting interaction with his family from his nearby hometown of Nazareth, where he sides with his spiritual brothers and sisters and distances himself from his biological family, who don't seem to understand his identity or comprehend his mission. Then comes another confrontation with religious leaders, likely in the city of Capernaum. After which, looking for some solitude, Jesus sits down by the Sea of Galilee when a crowd gathers. And so he hops into a boat and tells a series of stories while all the people stood on the shore and listened. And parables 1 through 4 are told in this venue. Interesting, much of Jesus' ministry activity for 3 years actually takes place right here, in what some biblical archaeologists refer to as the evangelical triangle, at the confluence of busy trade routes from Asia, Africa, and Europe. One had to walk, or chariot, or horseback through this triangle of real estate in order to get to or from all of those regions of the world. And full of people from many walks of life, with all nations passing by on its international highways, this was a prime location for Jesus to get the word out, to talk about the kingdom. Now Jesus has left the crowd and gone indoors, presumably to Peter's house in Capernaum, and turns his attention to his disciples. And we hone in this morning on parables number 6 and number 7, recorded in Matthew chapter 13. Both very short, so I encourage you to turn there to Matthew chapter 13 now on your electronic device, or page 715 in one of the kinds of blue Bibles, or page 1519 in the other kind of blue Bibles that you can find in the seat rack in front of you. But first, while you're turning there, a story to whet your appetite for our two parables. A fond memory that I have from my childhood was tagging along with my father on Saturday trips to the garbage dump. One particular day, we tipped a huge load of junk out the back of our van, but some of it got stuck in the tailgate, and so my dad asked me to jump down into the mess. Slimy, smelly, seagull-infested trash. And after chucking the remaining items into the giant pile of garbage, I walked back to the front of the van, and I kicked a brown paper bag. And to my surprise and glee, about four $20 bills flew out of that brown paper bag. I let out a yell, and I quickly bent down, and I began to collect the valuable treasure that I just stumbled across. It was the best kick of my life. All told, there was $86.10. Actually, $86.35, but unable to contain the sheer delight that filled my countenance, I turned and hurled one of the quarters I just found deep into the landfill. I was so unexpectedly rich. Let's read the text, if we can still. Matthew chapter 13, 44 to 46. Jesus says, "The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field." Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. So God, I ask now that you would come and speak to us from your word. God, I pray that you'd move me out of the way and come and speak to us now by your Spirit. God, I pray that you might open our eyes, open our hearts today to see the treasure that is found in you. And I pray today, if there are things that are keeping us from following you or from experiencing the joy of following you, I ask Jesus today that you would come and set us free and break the chains. We are hungry to hear from you. Amen. Parable number one, hidden treasure. This is the stuff of legends and pirates. Arr! Buried treasure! Been working on my pirate all week. Far-fetched today in an era of banks and safety deposit boxes and liquid assets, but relatable in the ancient world where people held on to all their wealth and often hid their coins, jewels, and precious metals, burying them in a glass jar or a strong box to secure their fortune. For the threat of theft was very real. When a marauding army approached, people stashed valuables, and if a landowner did not survive an invasion, the treasure would remain buried, forgotten, unclaimed. Over the years, land could change hands several times, and its hidden treasure might go unnoticed. A man found a treasure hidden in a field. Now, it's unclear who this man was. What we do know is that this was not premeditated. He wasn't out with a metal detector searching clandestinely for valuables on someone else's property. This man was not looking. Perhaps he was just passing through and stumbled upon the treasure by accident. Or this piece of land was up for sale and he was walking the property before he made an offer when he happened upon the fortune. Or maybe he was a poor peasant, employed by the landowner and working the soil when he made his unexpected discovery. Regardless, he quickly rehid the treasure, then in his joy, went and sold all he had and bought that field. The treasure was of infinite value. Parable number two, a fine pearl. One of the most fascinating scientific processes that God has set up is how pearls come from oysters. Those tasty little underwater creatures that live inside a shell with two parts hinged together like this. Oysters open their shells to let in food and water. And sometimes a little piece of sand or a shell sneaks in, a foreign body, and the oyster recognizes it and creates a defense coating to cover it. And as time goes on, more and more layers of this coating are added. And eventually, after several years, the former irritant ends up looking like a beautiful, shiny stone called a pearl. The bigger and rounder the pearl, the more precious it is. Pearls were especially valuable in Jesus' day. They were a conspicuous or showy way of displaying wealth, particularly on a woman's necklace. And treasure seekers searched the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf, and the Indian Ocean for those special oyster shells with pearls inside. And the man in this second parable is an astute merchant looking for fine pearls. Uniquely sensitive to the value of a pearl, he knows exactly what he wants and where to look. In contrast to the man in the first parable who stumbles accidentally on his fortune, this is a man with capital, on a deliberate mission, willing to pay the highest price for the right product. Though surely he understands that the finest pearls are always the most elusive. And so, when he finds what he's looking for, the experienced pearler sells everything he has to buy it. It's worth it. For this one pearl eclipses all the others put together. And some explanation is necessary of this term, kingdom of heaven, that's used regularly throughout Matthew's gospel. Let me try to explain it for you today. That's really a whole class at Regent College if you'd like to take one, but here's a couple minutes on it. The kingdom of heaven is God's reign and rule actively invading the kingdom of Satan. It is the divine authority given by the Father to the Son, Jesus, to subdue all that is hostile to God, and to bring deliverance from darkness, and to deliver new life to humanity. The kingdom of heaven is both future. It will be fully inaugurated when Jesus returns. But it's also present, in the sense that, though sin still permeates the human race today, God's power continues to break through and touches people's lives. Like a buried treasure or a precious pearl, God's kingdom must be found. It's available now, yet it still remains hidden to some. And few recognize its value and orient their lives accordingly. The kingdom of heaven is supernatural. It's not bound by the things of this earth. It transcends the natural world order of things. And there's another paradox still. The kingdom of heaven is at the same time both simply received with childlike faith and costly. It's worth all we have, and then some. As one commentator says, once the kingdom of heaven is truly understood, nothing else can compare with it in value. Well, it's time to land the plane on the sermon with a few application points. Let's be clear. These parables are not some manipulative plea for us to sell all we have in order to obtain the kingdom. The truth is that we will... Oh, you like the picture? Is that what you like? Okay. Let me explain it. That's in Australia, all right? My grandfather fought in World War II, and some of our family members, they named this airstrip after us in northern Australia. Interesting, if you look at the site, it's had a lot of bullet shots on it, hey? You see? So, that's cool. I thought I'd pull it out for my last sermon before sabbatical. Are you with me now? Okay. Let me repeat. Let's be clear that these parables are not some manipulative plea for us to sell all we have in order to obtain the kingdom. Truth is, we'll never have enough to offer God in exchange for all he has. Instead, herein lies a clarion call to desire the King, Jesus, and his kingdom above all things. The stories of hidden treasure and a fine pearl are intended to expose the true trajectory of our hearts and raise some big questions. What's your passion? What keeps you up at night? Makes your heart jump with excitement? What do you long for most? Build your life on. When all the fluff in your life is stripped away, what's your heart's deepest desire? And first, I have to say, there's nothing worth more. The incomparable value of the kingdom is stressed here in our two parables. Back in 1998, James Hill found a small cave full of emeralds on his family property in North Carolina. The total weight of the emeralds was about 3,300 carats, and in comparison to the typical diamond wedding ring is a quarter or a half carat. This was a lot of emeralds. It turns out Hill's emeralds were some of the best quality emeralds in all of North America. When they were cut and polished up, they were worth millions of dollars, right in the man's own backyard, and not even when he was looking for them. And it really changed him. Mr. Hill became obsessed with the fear that people would sneak onto his land and grab whatever pieces of emerald they could find. And so he hired guards to protect his jewels and his property. And worried that his emerald supply would one day run out, Mr. Hill fixated on finding more, digging up large chunks of his land in the search. But evidently, there was only a limited supply of emeralds. Jesus and his kingdom are offered freely, without limit. There is always more of him. But it's easy to get sucked into this world's competing ideologies and to play along with everyone else. Obsess about accumulating our fortunes and possessions, building our status. Fixate on becoming successful, or at least appearing to be so. Gaining followers, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, or running from one experience, one relationship to another, when none of these pursuits are worth our full devotion. And none of the glory these things promise or deliver ever lasts. It's why earlier in Matthew chapter 6, verse 20, Jesus warns his audience, "But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal." Jesus himself lived simply, and most citizens of the first century Roman Empire would have found Jesus' call here unduly radical, including his disciples. As do, I dare say, most Vancouverites today in our anti-Christian West Coast culture who might balk at Christianity and its claims, saying, "Who really needs your Jesus when we can have all of this?" But Jesus is the one pearl of great price. His beauty, His love, His presence never fade. Second, there's a cost to following Jesus. Focus in both of Jesus' short parables is on the price each man was willing to pay. To remain single-minded in commitment to Jesus, sacrifice is required. The Essenes were a sect of Judaism that flourished from 2nd century BC to 1st century AD. Jewish historian Josephus recorded large numbers of them throughout Roman Judea. And they've gained notoriety in recent times as a result of the discovery at En Gedi of the Dead Sea Scrolls, commonly believed to be the Essenes' library. The Essenes shared spiritual beliefs, and they congregated and lived in communal life dedicated to asceticism. Some groups practiced celibacy, voluntary poverty, and daily water immersion as a reminder of their need for God's constant cleansing, death to the world's way of living. The life rule of the Essenes, sacrifice. The giving up of earthly possessions beyond the basics of food and water, so as to say, wholeheartedly devoted to God. Bible scholar R.T. France says, "It is only those who make the kingdom of heaven their top priority who will enjoy its blessings." It was Jim Elliot, missionary to Ecuador in the 1950s, who once said this, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep, the stuff of this world, to gain what he cannot lose, the treasure of life with Jesus, now and for eternity." Later in 1956, in the line of duty, Elliot was murdered by the very tribal people he was attempting to reach. Here's the point. Following Jesus costs us. Sadly, Christian spirituality is not Jesus plus all of my efforts and my achievements and whatever I want, my desires. Or Jesus is an add-on to my already busy life. I'll fit him in somewhere between work and the gym. Or me and Jesus. He's a pretty good guy, and I'll take a mild dose of church and Jesus. Good for me, good for my family. Hey, it's good for Jesus too. He's pretty lucky to have me. No, Jesus is calling us to something far more pricey and not that easy. The Apostle Paul describes firsthand the cost of discipleship in Philippians 3, 7, and 8. "But whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them garbage that I may gain Christ." The kingdom of heaven is more valuable than anything else, and we must be willing to give up everything to put it in its rightful place in our lives. And when we truly bow the knee to surrender to Jesus, a great exchange takes place. Our life for His. What a sweet swap. Third, there's great joy found in Jesus. We see a certain childlike naivete, a joyful abandon in the man who finds the glorious treasure and is then willing to sacrifice everything. He doesn't flinch or bat an eye. He sells all he has to buy in. Another thing I love about the Christian story is this. Whether you're like a poor peasant, desperate, struggling to make it, not even sure what you're looking for, or if you're like a wealthy merchant, as yet unsatisfied with your current assets, on a life quest for something fine, God's invitation of His kingdom extends even to you. Jesus is entirely accessible to all humanity, without prejudice, no exclusions. And we are all confronted with the same choice. See the treasure and go back to our old way of life. Or see God and His kingdom and want it more than anything else. This is the response Jesus is driving at. For many, the fear of making decisions, of jumping in on faith, paralyzes us. Others of us are waiting around for a better option when the treasure of Jesus is right in front of us, staring us in the face, there for the taking. And I say this morning, friends of North Shore Alliance, don't be afraid to jump in on Jesus. It's the best decision you could ever make. The cynical ones of you in the audience might wish to write off my words. Predictable. He's a pastor. He gets paid to promote Jesus. Or perhaps you think it's easy for pastors working in a Christian church environment to feel God's joy all the time. Reality is, often I too miss the gift of Jesus and His kingdom. I sometimes lose sight of the joy that it is to know Jesus personally and the privilege that it is to help others walk with Jesus more closely. John 10, verse 10, Jesus reminds us, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Frankly, I'm tired of it. I've wasted too much time of my life allowing the thief to steal, kill, and destroy, robbing my joy. How about you? Focused on the wrong narrative, the wrong values, the wrong messages that Satan and this world shout your way, and you've overlooked the infinite treasure of Jesus and all the fullness that He offers right there in front of you. Deep down, I've come to believe with certainty that Jesus, His kingdom, and the new life and transformation that He alone can bring, the cause of Christ, is worth giving my entire life to. The kingdom is much more than just the bliss of going to heaven when we die. I don't know what that's going to be like. But the kingdom is also here and now. Knowing the Father, hearing His voice, experiencing His love, His power, and His joy. Trusting Him alone to meet our needs. I'm even coming to embrace the posture of sitting, resting in that place where I have no other plan but to count on Jesus. Yes, it will always be difficult, but also incredibly freeing. The never dull adventure of relinquishing control and allowing God to lead our lives is beautiful and so good for us. And as ambassadors of the kingdom, we get to share this treasure we've found with family, friends, and neighbors. And watch as they begin to welcome Jesus' presence into their lives too. This brings great joy. Best life possible. Life to the full. True joy found only in Jesus. I want to invite the team to come now. Lead us in a couple of songs of response.